Fiona Trembath joins me.
Hello.
You weren't ready then, were you?
No.
look, because we've just been talking about what we want to talk about.
We've just sort of broadened it out a little bit. Because we've put a lot of thought into this.
Yeah, a lot. So what did you want to talk about?
Nothing, really.
Okay, well, we'll let it go then. 1-300-800-222. If you've got nothing to talk about, we're likely to hear from you.
People you admire.
People that you admire that you've met.
Yep.
Or that you would like to meet.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this.
Mm.
And I don't think there's actually somebody that I have admired and then met. I think I've met people and then admired them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But not that I've that I've actually seen, that I've got, gee, I always wanted to meet such and such. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's ever happened to me in my life.
Happens to me with authors.
Yeah.
I'll read a book and I'll be gobsmacked, and then I'll go to the Writers' Festival and then I'll meet them and I'll go all gooey.
Well, that's because there's a great, because you know where to find that. It's like stalking.
Well, yeah, with a, you're allowed to. Getting a cue to stalk.
Have you met anybody, that, like, just apart from authors, that you stalked?
Yeah, I stalk a lot. I've met you.
Yeah.
That's how I met my husband.
Does he know that?
He does now.
How? Because you were telling me someone you met in Hobart.
Oh, yes. He's called the father of modern psychology, Martin Seligman, and he's kind of the pioneer of modern psychology and positive psychology and the science of happiness, which I've been studying for a long time. And he's a bit like a demigod for me. Awesome dude. Amazing.
How did you know it was him?
Man. I stalked him before.
No,
I actually I attended a big conference which he was speaking at a few years ago. And he walked into the restaurant. This is in Hobart. I just picked this little random place.
Hmm.
And I said to Steve, is that Marty Seligman? And he said, oh, it looks like him. And then he had an American accent. We sussed it out and it was. And I just nearly choked. Because I'd been on a 5-day walk and all there, I'm learning. Steve's, you know, testing me on all my knowledge on what I've been learning.
Hmm.
And then here he is.
And did you go and say hello?
Yeah. Steve said, okay, now just calm down. You got 10 seconds. What are you going to say? And I was going to go, oh, I love you. I didn't know.
What did you say?
I said, hello, is your name Martin? I said...
Did you try and be all smooth?
No, I just said, are you Marty Seligman? And he said, yes, I am. I said, oh, hi, I'm Fiona. And you know, you've hugely influenced my life and my work. And I just wanted to say... hello.
And was he appreciative?
He was lovely.
Yeah.
And he and his wife and kids, and we all walked back to our respective hotels and...
Good stuff.
..spoke about leadership and positive psych and, oh.
I see, he talked.
We talked.
Good stuff.
He knows me. I know him.
Pals.
He's going to stalk me now.
Merrily's actually going to talk about somebody who I would like to meet.
Who you would like to meet?
Yeah, which is interesting. Okay. Hello, Merrily.
Hi, Trev. Vivian Bullwinkle / Strawn.
So can you go say the name again?
Vivian Bullwinkle, and her married name, I think, was Strawn. She was the sister that the Japanese marched into the ocean. You know, when they marched all the nurses into the ocean and shot?
Yeah, in Singapore.
In Singapore, and she survived. And she was just the most fantastic woman I've ever, ever met.
You know, when I knew that we were going to talk about this, and I was thinking that I don't know if I've actually met... I've been lucky enough to interview a World War One veteran and talk to him about his experiences, but it wasn't somebody that I knew before. But thinking about it, Vivian Bullwinkle was one of the people that, when I was thinking about this, that I would have been fascinated to meet.
Oh, Trevor, look, I met her a few times because I'm a Navy wife, and I was Secretary of the Navy's Association... Navy Wives Association over here, and she used to come and speak to us on regular, you know, when she was in Western Australia, and she was the most gracious, loving, forgiving woman you'd ever want to meet in your life, and talk about an inspiration. She was it. She was just unreal. And I'll tell you somebody else that I really admire, and I know him very well, was my uncle. He was a prisoner of war in Changi. And he actually worked with, some of the doctors.
Did he talk about his experience much?
No. Nope. You know how I found out? He was on the ABC radio one day giving an interview.
Well.
And he was one of the vets that went across to Japan and was officially apologised to. And he is just a remarkable, remarkable man himself, and he's paid back, you know, the pay forward. He has paid forward all his life as well, and he's a really wonderful man, and he's 90 years old.
Really, tell me, did Vivian Borg talk about her experience?
Not much, no.
Because it would have been really interesting to hear her perspective.
Her perspective was she couldn't understand how one human being could be so cruel to another human being, and she really admired the Australian soldiers and how they stood and took what they took and survived. And also, you know, the atrocities and the cruelty that went on. And that's what she said, you never forget, but it was an experience that you have to learn to forgive. And my uncle is exactly the same. And Trev, they are fantastic people when you actually meet them. And they don't actually talk to you about the horrors that they saw. They have a tendency to, you know, sort of not brush it aside, but I think they try not to dwell on it too much because it would have been a very awful experience.
And most, Merrily, thank you.
Welcome.
And most people have experienced war are quite often very anti-war.
Yes. But you can hear how much she's been affected just
yeah,
telling
you can hear
that
it in the
story.
Voice.
Yeah.
She's an amazing woman, Vivian Bullwinkle. Hello, Claire.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, Claire.
I want to say three people. The first person who actually came up and shook my hand and singled me out in the crowd, and I will never forget it, was the Reverend Bishop Tutu.
He was on my list of people to meet too.
Oh, that'd be good.
So what was that experience? Where was it, Claire?
Now, time's a little bit hazy, but it was, I think, either late 70s or early 80s in Christchurch, New Zealand, in the poor little cathedral that is no longer standing. And he came and spoke about anti-apartheid. And it was quite unique because I think nearly everybody, the whole population of Christchurch, went to hear him speak because New Zealand, ahead of its time, was anti-apartheid. And there was like this huge march through the city. And even my mother, who's a Catholic woman who would never do something like that, she went on the march as well.
You know, Bishop Tutu's voice, I just love listening to him talk.
Yeah.
Like, not only for the content of what he says, but he has just one of the most peaceful, calming voices.
Well, he singled me out in the crowd and I felt blessed. I was blessed. I believe that he singled me out for a reason. People tell me that they are inspired by me because I was born with quite an obvious physical disability. And I have spent my life like what the Marty Seligman that what's your name again?
Fiona.
Fiona. sorry, Fiona.
That's all right.
You were talking about him. I don't know if I've read any of his stuff, but I certainly do believe in that thinking, that positive thinking. And, like, I mean, I was floored that someone told me that I inspired them, but from that day on I realised, you know, stop bitching in my head about how bad things were for me, because other people were looking at me completely differently. And then the other person that I would love to meet is Erin Brockovich.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I'm a person who's struggled all my life with bureaucracy and I'm still struggling to have my rights met. And I've rung up Tony a few times and I've told him about my struggles because I want everybody to know, like I want to be a voice for other disabled people, you know. And she is an inspiration to me because she is like me. She is a single mother struggling that does not have a voice. And she had sick children and she had people talking down to her. And today I had to go to a meeting and empower myself. And I just kind of channeled her.
Claire, thank you.
Wow.
Good to talk to you.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Good on you, Claire.
Ruth joins me. Good morning, Ruth.
Just a moment. Hello, Trevor.
Hello, Ruth.
How you doing?
Good.
And Fiona.
Hello.
Hello. Now, I want to speak about one lady that I admired. I admire her so much. From an accident, I lost my ability to walk, okay, for a couple of years. And I read Denise Shepherd's books to inspire me while I was learning to walk.
Now,
you know Denise Shepherd?
Well, this is the cyclist?
Yes.
That was hit by a car?
Yep, that's right.
And she went on to win... did she win a silver medal?
Yeah, yes, she did.
I think so.
Yeah.
And she learnt to fly and then became an instructor, I think. I can't recall now.
I think that's right. Yeah, I've heard her speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And one day off I went to hear her speak because I was so inspired by her and motivated by her books. And a lady came out to me and said, "Ruth, come with me." And I walked out and there was Janine. She was taking me to meet her. Oh. So to show Janine how much I really liked her, I burst into tears. I'm sure she was flattered. And it's quite funny. I didn't want to take a bad photo of her, and I get the photo of the bad one of me.
See, that was pretty incredible, though, because
it was wonderful.
Her injuries were extensive.
Mm. Oh.
And to be able to come back to ride, let alone competitively and in such a short space of time, relatively,
fabulous.
Too.
And then to fly. Right. I think she's a pilot, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
A pilot's license, yeah.
And she has the children.
Mm-hmm.
And she just inspired me so much. I followed her books whilst I was rehabilitating.
Mm.
And I just couldn't believe there was God herself sitting there waiting for me to go up and meet her.
That's great.
Good on you, Ruth. Thank you. It's especially people change people's lives.
Mm.
I mean, Desmond Tutu is just phenomenal.
Dalai Lama would be pretty cool.
He's a happy chap.
Wouldn't mind chatting to him.
I can't remember which one of those morning show hosts was doing an interview with the Dalai Lama.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought he'd tried telling him a joke. And I think it was a Buddhist joke.
Okay.
Or it was something to do with the Dalai Lama or something. And it's the first time I've ever seen him not laugh.
He laughs at everything
except a joke. It was so funny. Hello, Layla.
Hello, Trevor. My person that I met was Harry Butler back in 82. I'd only just started university and he was giving a dinner lecture. And both my husband and I always admired him for his work that he did in the bush and all of that sort of stuff. And he was wonderful. But the other person I would have always loved to have met was your oldest brother, Andrew Richards, because I'm a cricket nut.
Oh, no, I'm not a cricketer.
No, but I said your oldest brother.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not part of the... I'm not actually one of the chapels.
Oh, aren't you?
Cricket-wise. So I can't even arrange it for you.
No, but I love Ian Chappell.
Yeah.
Oh. And
grumpy old bugger he is.
Hey?
He's a grumpy thing.
Well, but he's... When he was Australian captain and that, he brought cricket right up.
Yep.
And he... You know, he pulled it out. But back to Harry Butler, he was just something unreal. One of those people that you get so much out of. He only spoke for about half an hour, but half an hour was just... Oh.
Now, you know he went on to work for a mining company.
Yes, I know.
I think he worked...
Did he?
I think he works for on Barrow Island as an environmental advisor.
But he's still grumpy.
It's Ian Chappell that's grumpy. Harry Butler couldn't be grumpy.
Oh, Harry Butler.
No, they threatened.
Oh, no, not Ian Chappell.
I'm confused.
Leaving on Barrow Island because there's a boat there and it comes in every so often to get you on and off.
Mm.
But he was, in 82 he was at his forefront and finding a lot of bad about our Australian natives and our environments.
Layla, thank you. Do you remember on telly?
I remember, Harry.
There'd always be something. There'd always be something underneath. Let's have a little look what's under here.
There'd
always be something under there. They'd put something under there and, hold it down until then it...
Voila.
Hello, Ray.
Oh, g'day.
Somebody that you would like to meet or you have met?
Somebody I met, I was 9 years of age. My father had recently died. I was feeling pretty sorry for myself. And this lady was from Holland. And her name was Corrie ten Boom. Strange name.
Hmm.
It's a good name.
And she and her sister were put in a concentration camp by the Germans for helping Jewish people during the end of the Second World War. And the concentration camp guard that was supervising them, he simply, well, he was responsible for the sister's death, basically. And the commandant, first of all, unusually, apologised to Corrie and released her. And about a year later, after the war, Corrie was in Germany, and the guard comes up and he said, oh, slight mistake, so sorry. I mean, he made light of it. And he held out his hand to shake her hand, and she said it was the hardest thing she ever had to do.
Mm-hmm.
But she shook his hand, and, well, personally, I'm now thinking that actually made me go really easy on Germans and Latvians and all those people who were Nazis after, you know, during the war. And in some ways I've benefited from forgiveness, but I'll tell you what, yeah, she was a very interesting lady, and she came out to Australia one time and she gave a few lectures. And, yeah, she had an influence on me.
It's, well, that ability to forgive, especially under huge circumstances like that, are enormous.
Because forgiveness isn't condoning.
No, it's not condoning, but I guess it's recognising.
Oh, I was just a bit appalled with the with the guard at first. He comes up and he tried to make light of it, but after he shook her hand, he had tears in his eyes. Mm. So she said, yeah.
Mm. Mm. Well, thank you.
Well, and from 9 years old to be influenced.
You know, civil rights, I would have loved to have met some of the people at the forefront of civil rights in America.
Mm.
I just finished, Kathy and I watched The Help the other day.
Have you read the book?
No, I haven't.
You must.
Because after we saw it, we both went, oh, got to read the book.
Yeah. It's a great movie.
And now it's written from back then, isn't it? So it was actually written at that time.
No, it wasn't written at that time. It's a contemporary novel.
This is what I couldn't work out. No, it's a fictional story.
Yep, recent fiction.
Oh, so it's recent fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So there was never a book that actually did
that. I don't think so. That friend of mine who I brought in with me tonight, who I admire, she introduced me to that book.
Oh, okay.
Awesome book.
It's because it was such a wonderful, and it was interesting because we'd just watched Fried Green Tomatoes the night before and then got that out. And and it was just when I was looking, and I thought, what a difference in attitudes to African-American people in the two stories and their difference in class.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was wonderful.
Yeah. I just read the best book
called
Gang of One by Gary Mulgrew. He was actually interviewed on ABC. I don't know which program it was. Scottish guy who was part of the Enron collapse.
Oh, I recognise that name.
Gary Mulgrew, you've got to read that book.
Yeah, why?
Because it's riveting. It's him in a Texan prison waiting for, what do they do when they deport them? Or what's, they extradited him from the UK into a US state prison, and just incredible integrity and courage and humour.
Good morning, Warren.
Hey, Trev, how you going?
Good.
G'day.
Mate, I've been lucky enough to meet some of my sporting heroes from the bikes and things like that, but the two people I met that really inspired me was a couple called Terry and Melissa Gray from Merimbula down on the South Coast. And they got a little boy, his name's Tyler, he's 6 years old now, and he's got that neoblastoma, that childhood cancer.
Mm.
And you remember recently or last year I done that charity ride for him.
Yep.
But just that couple in general, like they're just the most loveliest people, and they've given up everything, and they haven't only got him, they've got other children as well, but they've basically, the whole family sort of put aside everything to try and help this little boy, and he's actually doing quite well at the moment. He's he's not in remission, but he's in class, what they call stable, and he's he's going to school and he's doing sports, and he's just really sort of gone forward, and the whole family's sort of gone forward from it as well.
Fiona Trembath is with us this morning. As we talk about the people that you've met that you admire. So you've admired them and then you got to meet them. And if you aren't lucky enough to have ever met somebody that you admire, then perhaps somebody that you admire that you'd like to meet. And what would you ask them if you had the opportunity?
Who do you want? Who do you admire? Did you come up with anyone?
I admire Desmond Tutu.
And what would you say to him?
What would I ask him?
Mm. How's it going?
How are you? Good. I think you're really good.
I like you.
I think you're really good.
You rock.
What would I like to ask him? I'd like to ask him how apartheid affected him personally. And what his personal story was with apartheid and how it affected family. And then how you managed to forgive off the back of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's really interesting to find out how you manage that. Mm. I mean, I guess there's almost an expectation as a religious leader that you do, but I wonder whether or not inside whether you do. You know what I mean? If the scarring is too harsh, especially when you see what's been done to your families for generations and generations.
Yeah. Mm. They're good questions. You should be on radio. You could interview people.
They're sort of normal ones. Warren?
Yes, Trevor.
Now, we return to Warren because Warren was telling us about how he considers his wife to be an inspiration.
Yeah, mate, Melissa had a tumour on the pituitary gland and it basically crippled her in many ways. She was in a wheelchair by the end of the disease. And she went and had surgery where they actually cut down the middle of her face and opened it up and actually dug the tumour out.
Wow.
But she basically bounced back from being in a wheelchair where she's out riding motorbikes now. She was actually a horse girl, but she struggles to ride a horse a bit now because she has a little bit of weakness in her legs still. But she's out riding motorbikes. She's had two lovely babies, which are obviously my daughters. And, mate, she went through hell with this tumour and, some pretty major surgery sort of, and when they peeled open her face and, dug it out, but, she's bounced completely back. And just like Terry and Melissa with little Tyler, like, some people go through hell and they seem to just continue on and grin and bear it and, benefit from it in the end. Oh, there's plenty of people out there that are very lucky as far as sportsmen and movie stars and all that, but just the little people that sort of seem to inspire me more than the heroes.
Mm. Well, it's a fair point because you tend to come across, and that's why I was sort of interested. Maybe we'll do it another time to talk about people whose story that you heard that you just found interesting.
Yeah,
we might do that next time you come in.
Okay,
Norma.
Hello.
Yes, Norma.
How are you, Trevor?
I'm pretty good, and Fiona is too.
Hello, Fiona.
Hello, Norma.
How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Now, who did you want to talk about?
I was very privileged when, just the year before I got married, I was nursing in a private nursing home in Adelaide. And I was very privileged. We had a very special visitor came to have an operation, and it was Sir Donald Bradman.
Oh.
The Don.
Wow.
And at that time, we'd not been young, 25-year-olds and younger and older, we sort of didn't really play, watch cricket or know what cricket was all about. Until my later years, when I found out how important person he was, and I can tell you now, he was the most gracious man I have ever met.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because sometimes you might think, "Oh, I've really wanted to meet," and then you meet them and go, "Ooh,
yes." No. Mm.
So he wasn't a grumpy old devil.
Oh no. He was very gracious, grateful for whatever you did for him. He thanked profusely, every time you'd done something for him. And, of course, we had to, with our matron's orders, we had to call him Sir.
Hmm.
And he hated it. He said, please call me Dom. But we were not allowed to. And his wife was a lovely lady too.
But it's nice when you hear those sorts of stories because it's not necessarily the way that it can be.
Mm.
Hello, Mark.
Good morning, Trevor, Fiona.
Hello, Mark.
When I was a young man, quite a few years ago, I was at the pictures of my girlfriend, and my girlfriend nudged me and she said, well, come on, Hero, there's your girlfriend over there, who happened to be someone that I had a major crush on, which I suppose you'd call admiration. And I walked over to a lovely Rowena Wallace and I introduced myself and came out with a rather corny line. I said, you're a major babe or something quite corny, I think. I'd actually waited until her date for the night, or the gentleman that she was with had actually gone off to get some coffee or something. And she took that all on the chin, and she was a delightful young lady, and we had a few minutes of conversation. And I've been waiting for her to contact me for many, many years, but it hasn't quite happened.
Good luck, Mark.
She might come and clean your house.
Good luck. Terrible. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, how are you going, Trevin?
Good, Kevin. Now, who is the person that you admired that you met or who that you'd like to meet if you're given the opportunity?
Probably the one that I most admired that I've met is Sir Jack Brabham. I spent a week with him about 20 years ago.
Oh.
And, what he did to, you know, build his own cars, design them from scratch and then win a couple of Formula One World Championships, I don't think we'll ever figure one out.
Did he actually build and design his own car?
Yeah, the Repco Brabham. That's where the name comes from.
Okay.
Yeah, and, look, he's just a perfect gentleman. You know, for somebody you see screaming around a racetrack, but he's a quiet, gentle man, just a lovely guy.
Did you get to talk to him about car racing?
Yeah.
Because that's what I always wonder is if you ever get to meet these people, and then you think, oh, I wouldn't want to talk to them about what they do, because they might go, it's the last thing I want to talk about.
No, he's great. Another one briefly that I met too was Terry Pratchett. I've always admired his writing.
Oh, wow.
But the other guy that I wanted to meet was Spike Milligan, and I never got a chance.
That would have been interesting.
What
he went through during the war, and I read his war memoirs from, you know, when I was a teenager and everything, and that guy went through hell.
Mm. Yeah.
And he used his sense of humour, you know, just to keep him going. And I remember when I was living in Sydney, I knew where his address was in Woi Woi, and I felt like knocking on the door and just saying, thank you, you've inspired me. But I didn't have the guts to do it.
Mm. One of those people that he suffered from depression too, didn't he?
Yeah, yes, bad depression. I remember seeing him at the Theatre Royal in Hobart in about 1984, and at the end of it, he was pretty much a mess. We asked him for an encore, and he came in and he said, look, I've got to go and talk to my wife. I'm sorry. You know, it's as much as I can do tonight.
Mm.
And he left. But, no, a very inspiring man, that one.
Yeah.
And a very funny one at times.
Yeah, genius.
Good stuff. Thanks very much, Kevin.
No worries. Okay.
We're going to look for a little bit of Spike Milligan. I'm not sure if we've got it here, but we're just going to have a little look. This is, now, I don't know if listeners are aware, but Spike Milligan came to the ABC and did an interview in at the ABC. And when he left, I'm not sure if he got lost, but somehow he wandered up to the newsroom at the ABC. And have we got it there, Pev? And this is what happened.
The news in brief. The Prime Minister, Mr. McMahon, arrived back in Australia today after his overseas tour. He told newsmen at Sydney Airport that he could not have had more valuable discussions with both President Nixon and the British Prime Minister, Mr. Heath.
What about Spike Milligan?
But he refused to give details of the discussions before he had spoken in the House.
What about Spike Milligan?
Mr. McMahon also refused to comment when asked about criticism of him by two former ministers, Mr. Gorton and Mr. Killen.
And Spike Milligan?
The Prime Minister was met at the airport by his two children and members of the Cabinet, including the Treasurer, Mr. Snedden, and Spike Milligan. The authorities in Dhaka, the capital of East Pakistan, arrested nearly 140 people yesterday in a house-to-house search for terrorists. Four people, said to be Bengali rebels, were killed when they were attempted to shoot their way out through a cordon of troops. A government spokesman said the search was for Bengali terrorists who had been harassing the authorities with bombing and shooting incidents almost every day. The editors of Jane's Weapons System say the Soviet Union has relied increasingly on its own technology to overtake and in some cases surpass the West in weapons development. In their foreword to the 1971-72 edition of Jane's Weapons Systems, the editors say pressure for cuts in defense spending in some Western countries is at least partly responsible for the improved Soviet position.
What position is that?
Australia's national international airline Qantas has been awarded a trophy by the British Guild of Air Pilots and Navigators for its safety record.
And 33 crashes.
Qantas is the second Australian airline to win the Cumberbatch Trophy. TAA won it in 1958. The Australian Post Office is doing good business in the United... in the United States.
What?
An agent for the Post Office in New York says sales of stamps to collectors could bring in $200,000 in the first year of business. A crowd of more than 1,500 friends and relatives was on the dock at Garden Island to welcome home the 450 troops who arrived back from Vietnam aboard the HMAS Sydney this morning. The soldiers will begin a march through the streets of Sydney with contingents of sailors and airmen in a little under half an hour. The South Australian Attorney General, Mr. King, has warned that people in the state who stock or sell a New South Wales publication, Searchlight, run the risk of prosecution. Mr. King said the three issues of the publication that he had seen were obviously very offensive to a great many people. Mr. King was speaking in the South Australian Parliament.
Well, there was nobody listening.
A man whose son died after he hit him was sentenced to 4 years jail in Sydney Court of Quarter Sessions this morning. James Patrick Michael Healy, 36, a printer, was found guilty by a jury of the manslaughter of his son. More news in 1 hour.
You'll never make it.
Rod McNeil from 1971, with Spike Milligan, having after done an interview, went for a wander around and ended up in the newsroom where the news was being read by Rod. Do you notice though, when he's doing that, do you notice Spike Milligan, not when there were serious stories,
pulling back
and saying nothing, but then chipping in when needed?
The poor newsreader.
He did a good job, though.
He did
a good job managing to keep going.
I couldn't have done it.
Eric. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. I had the honour, my wife and I had the honour of having Vivian Bullwinkle and Margaret Anderson, her nursing friend, to dinner at our home. We met Vivian through as matron of the Infectious Diseases Hospital, and we had the honour to have them to dinner at our home. Wonderful people they both were, and the Margaret Anderson, of course, won the George Medal for her bravery in throwing herself across wounded soldiers who were being machine gunned on an escape ship from Singapore.
They're both incredible women, and I was saying about Vivian Bullwinkle just a little while ago. Was it interesting talking to them, Eric? Did they talk about their experiences much in Singapore?
No. I just want to talk about friendly things and be part of the dinner group.
Yeah. But was it more? It's interesting when you hear about people like that because you know their backstory.
Yes.
Which is such a phenomenal one, and I wonder if sometimes that sort of shrouds your impressions of the person. However, the impression of the person is an amazing person anyway.
Yes.
So I guess what you've got there is.
A wonderful memory.
Yeah, and
wonderful people.
Yeah,
and my brother was also a prisoner of war in Changi.
Mm.
Wow.
Anyway,
Eric, thank you.
Thank you for your program.
Not a
bye
problem.
Now.
Bye bye.
It's amazing.
It's because quite often, well, I don't know because I've never met someone like that. Do you know what I mean? They're always. Mm. Anyway, shut up. Hello, Jason.
Good morning. How are we both?
Oh, pretty good.
Good, Jason.
So now I've got a couple of different ones. 10 years ago, my girlfriend, now wife, gave me a book by Bernard Carrick. He was the police commissioner of New York around the late 90s, 2000s, and he and Giuliani cleaned up New York.
Yep.
Turned it around, and it was just a biography that, you know, of his life, really. It was called The Lost Son. And he wanted to be a police officer, and he, you know, couldn't quite get there, and he started out in the penitentiary, and he worked his way up, and then he came across to the police force, and then ended up being a police commissioner. And just, yeah, his story was just brilliant. It really did inspire me to be better than I was, or, you know, not to believe in yourself, no matter what, and you never know what could occur. And funny enough, he was writing his book, and he was actually just finished up the week of 9/11. And he was doing a handover takeover, and the new commissioner let him run the lead on 9/11 and run it. Because they were all downtown that day when it happened, obviously. And, yeah, so he's at the end of the book, there's a postscript regards the 9/11 stuff. But he'd be someone I'd love to meet and have a talk to. The other one would be I'd love to have a conversation with Robin Williams, the comedian.
Yeah. That'd be interesting.
I don't know if it'd end up, I don't know, because whenever you see him interviewed, he just goes off on things.
Yeah,
he just goes off.
Be crazy. I think he just, I hope that's what he would be like. He'd just be like nothing but jokes. I'd want to walk out wetting myself.
Unfortunately, what you tend to hear about, when you hear about like a lot of comedians, they're not really very funny people.
No.
No, and I think he would be. And he's like, yeah. But just really quickly, if you don't mind, I had a massive, and still do have a massive crush on the Channel 10 presenter, Sandra Sully. And I always thought, I always like to watch her before I go to sleep, and that sounds a bit creepy, but yeah. Like,
it does sound a bit creepy, but anyway.
I had a big crush on her, and lo and behold, I always mention that to my girlfriend. She goes, you'll never meet her, blah, 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 it's all good. Anyway, I proposed to my girlfriend, and the very next day, I go to my little cafe on my way home from work, and the barista goes, hey, mate, do you like Sandra Sully? And I said, do I? Oh, mate, she's gorgeous. She's the best looking presenter on TV. Yeah, we'll just turn around and look out the window. She's out there. And I'm like, no way. So give me something to write on. He gave me a little coffee cup that they've got there, and I went outside, and I, excuse me, Miss Sully. She says, yes, and she looks up with her girlfriend, and I said, listen, I hope you don't mind me interrupting you with your coffee, but just wanted to say I'm a big fan, and I love your autograph, and I've got to tell you, you're the most beautiful woman on TV. And she went, a shade of red, and she turned to her girlfriend and she goes, you said on TV, and I said, oh, no, Miss Sully, don't tell yourself short. You're one stunning-looking woman. And she went bright red.
Jason, thank you. You should have just stick with Bernard Kerrick. thank you. Tom, hello.
Good evening, Trev. It's just after midnight here, so it's not too late.
25 past.
Beg your pardon?
25 past midnight.
Yeah. On the weekend, we had our country music festival in Boorowa in Western Australia, our state country music festival. And I was fortunate enough to meet the lovely... Sarah, what was it?
Sarah Storer.
Sarah Storer, yeah. And she's taller. She's taller than you imagine. She said she's 6 foot, but I think she'd probably be closer to 6'1". But she's just the most delightful young lady I reckon I've ever met, mate.
She worked in Aboriginal communities as a teacher.
Yes.
Did she?
She did. Mm. She did. Yeah. And what I liked most about it when she was on stage was she explained every song. You know, she explained the situation or what happened. Why she wrote particular songs, and boy, she certainly has written some lovely music. I was fortunate enough to meet her and have a chat with her.
I'll play one of her songs. Which one do you want to hear?
I like Firefly, Buffalo Bill. I heard a whole heap. Actually, strangely, I've got a lot of music, but I never had any of hers, so I bought a couple of CDs on the weekend.
I always like Beautiful Circle's a great song because it's basically.
Yes, it is too. She sang that.
Can I play that one?
Go for that one, mate.
I like that.
But she's just one of the most delightful young ladies I've ever met. And I don't think her photos do her justice. You know, I don't know if she's not very photogenic or something, but she's more beautiful than her photos on the albums, Matt suggests.
Tom, thank you.
That's nice.
And George will be our last caller. Good morning, George.
Oh, g'day, Trev. How are you?
Good.
Just quickly, if that lady Claire, who's wanting to meet Erin Brockovich, she's going to be speaking in Sydney on Monday, 19th of March at 6 o'clock at the Sydney University Law School. So if Claire's listening, you might be able to... I know she's sort of in the Sydney shorter area, so if you can make your way there, you'll get a chance to meet your idol.
Why does she do that ad for that legal company, for that law firm?
Well, I'm actually not her manager, Trev.
No, but you know how, like you sort of get an appreciation for someone for an amazing job they've done, and then they sort of do a, I don't know, it felt wrong. Anyway.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people done strange ads that they're probably not proud of in hindsight. So
anyway.
Yeah, one person that I'm very proud to have met, I mean, I've met quite a few famous people. This is one of the first guys, maybe even the first really famous person I ever met, was Harry Belafonte, who I saw in a concert and managed to kind of inveigle myself backstage and shook his hand and told him how much an admirer of his I was, not only as a, you know, a singer and performer and actor, but because of his human rights work, which a lot of people don't realise exactly. It's quite incredible. For example, he was one of the guys who actually, because Martin Luther King Jr., you might remember, because he was a preacher, he only got paid, I think it was about $8,000 a year, and so Harry Belafonte and a few other people actually helped support his family while he was travelling around the country and raising money for all those, like he helped organise the freedom rides down the south, you know, where the... people, black people sort of were riding around in buses where they weren't meant to be. and he just had a huge sort of influence and involvement in so many different areas of raising money for Africa and AIDS, activism in South Africa, and, you know, huge amount. This was after, obviously, I met him, but also before I met him, you know, he also helped organise the recording We Are the World, and I think he had a bit to do with Live Aid as well. So, it's interesting that kind of person can have a lot of involvement in areas that people aren't aware of. They obviously just know him as a singer and actor.
And quite often the other things that they have an interest in can be more interesting than the things that they actually do.
And they probably wouldn't get asked about the interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And he struggled from the beginning. I mean, the only way he got into acting was that he was working as a janitor's assistant, I think, and he got given two tickets by somebody he helped in the apartment building and went to the theatre and fell in love with it and met Sidney Poitier. And they were so poor that they used to have to actually buy a single seat to a local theatre, and they'd take turns going one half and the other, and the person who saw the first half would have to explain the plot to the guys going the second half, and then vice versa at the end, you know, what the guy missed in the second half. So I thought that was rather amusing. But it just shows you how both of them struggled, you know, against, you know, difficulties in, you know, for black guys trying to get into the arts.
Now, who else was it, George?
Spike Milligan, since somebody mentioned that.
Oh.
I was lucky enough that I got to meet him, and I got to see both sides of him. I saw a comedy performance that he did where he spent half the play beating up a big dummy of Malcolm Fraser, who was the Prime Minister at the time. But he's just a huge ball of energy, you know, making people laugh till their sides are falling apart. But then I went backstage and went in the dressing room, and you could see the black dog was on him. And I managed to cheer him up with a story about this little girl who had a little pet lamb who'd been wandering around the streets not so far from the theatre. It'd been in the news that day, and I thought it might be something like cheering him up, and it did. So, but, you know, he was, as I said, just seeing him sort of being totally on fire on stage, and then, like, 20 minutes later, you could just see this, you know, incredible weight on him, and, you know, just his face was just so... you know, anguished, and, you know, so I really got to see both sides of it in a very short space of time.
George, thank you. It's Peter Sellers. Was it Peter Sellers? Who was the other person that suffered from depression?
Bipolar.
Was it Peter? No, it wasn't Peter Sellers. It was...
Peter Cook?
Peter Cook.
Dudley Moore? One of those guys?
No, I don't know. It was Spike Milligan. There was... I thought it was Peter Sellers. No, not Peter Sellers. Peter Sellers did? Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. All these people are going in here, head shaking, going, Hello, Anna.
Hello, how are you?
Yes, Anna.
Good morning. When I did my nursing training at Swan Districts Hospital in 1972, I met Rolf Harris's mother and father.
They're from Bassendean.
And they were the most devoted couple I have ever met, so sweet and gentle and kind. And when Rolf used to write to them, because he was away, he'd always put this little face on the back of his envelope.
With that
and I'd
little
love to meet Rolf Harris.
With the beard.
Yeah.
Did they still live in Bassendean?
Yes, they did. Yeah. They came in as patients, and he'd come and visit, or if his mum was in.
Did you see that he's doing ads recently? He looks pretty good.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
He's getting on, too.
I haven't actually
40-year-old ads.
I haven't met him, just the mother and father.
The Because I remember going to see Rolf Harris in concert when I was, I must have been about 7, 8. And my sister had to take me. She was so annoyed.
Oh, really?
It was at not at Perry Lakes. What was the what was the swimming pool that they used to have concerts at?
Perry Lakes.
You know, not Perry Lakes because that was the stadium.
Yeah.
You know the big swimming pool?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of it.
In Perth?
Beattie Park.
Beattie Park.
That's it.
And he was on there at Beattie Park and doing the big paintings with the paintbrushes.
And the wobble board.
And the wobble board. That was
He's a clever guy.
He was great. Those paintings were wonderful.
Yeah.
They are beautiful.
And while he would be singing, he would do a painting. And I think too, have we got sunrise there, Pav? Have we got sunrise?
Yeah.
I'll play that in a minute. Because while he would sing that song, he would paint a sunrise using the big paintbrushes on a huge board.
Mm.
Then he'd turn it upside down.
Jake the Pig.
No, yeah. He was always funny.
Yeah.
Good on you, Anna.
Good on you. Thanks, Lee. Love the show.
Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Next time we talk, we'll talk about people who you've met that have an inspirational story.
Yeah,
that you sat down and went, geez, that was interesting to listen to.
Yeah. People, you don't know, was it who said this? Henry Lawson? You don't know anyone until you know their story. You can have a whole lot of judgments and ideas, but when you really find out their story, you go, wow.
Now that's interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining me.
You're welcome. Good
Fiona,
to see you.
Catch you later. Fiona Trembath, this is Overnights on your local ABC.